This podcast is brought to you by BetRivers. Download the BetRivers app from the App Store or Google Play Store. Must be 21. Available in Ohio only. Void where prohibited. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Sports gaming is provided in partnership with Dayton Real Estate Ventures, LLC, DBA, Hollywood Gaming at Dayton Raceway.
You're listening to The Bullpen with Adam the Bull on the BetRivers Network.
Welcome, everybody, to the latest edition of The Bullpen with Adam the Bull, brought to you by BetRivers. Coming up on today's podcast, we got a lot to get to here. We've got the owners' meetings going on down in Orlando right now in the NFL. The Cavs are an absolute disaster right now, and we are just a few days away from opening day in Major League Baseball. The Guardians roster is set, I think. We'll get to all of that on today's episode of The Bullpen with Adam the Bull, brought to you by BetRivers.
You're in The Bullpen with Adam the Bull on the BetRivers Network.
So we'll start with the Browns. Kevin Stefanski, Jimmy Haslam, Andrew Berry, and the rest of the Browns crew are down in Orlando for the owners' meetings. They started yesterday. They'll go through, I think, either tomorrow or Wednesday. And at this time, they're looking at some of the rule changes, and we've talked about some of this, and I'll get to some of them in a minute that I think are interesting. But Kevin Stefanski spoke this morning in the last hour as I record this, and he really didn't you got nothing new. Not a surprise. Kevin Stefanski is doesn't really give you much in general. But the one thing that I guess came out of this is a non-answer, and that's the situation with the play calling. It's something we've talked about for years. I guess they do this in every market. I'm trying to remember. It's been so long since I worked anywhere else. You know, when I last worked in New York, it was 2011. And I'm trying to remember, like, if we often had conversations about play calling. I can't really remember it so many years, but it's something we've talked about here quite a bit. And obviously, you know, there's so much more coverage now of the NFL than there ever has been, and certainly was the last time I was working in another city, that things have changed and we get more into the details, I think, than ever before, which is mostly a good thing, but there is some negative to that. Leads to some overanalysis of things that aren't worth analyzing to that deep level. You know, the play caller, I think some people get so obsessed with the play call. Now, it's important. It's 100% important. And Kevin Stefanski, I don't believe, is going to give up the play calling unless his hand is forced. I've said that from the beginning. It never made any sense that he'd want to give up the play calling unless he's had a change of heart. But in the end, it is collaborative. This idea that Alex Van Pelt had nothing to do with the play calling in the past just because he wasn't the guy actually calling the play on game day was silly. And it'll be the same thing here. Kevin Stefanski is going to still be involved in the play calling. The question is, will he actually call the plays? And we don't know as of today, and it's very strange. It continues to lead me to believe that maybe this decision has been taken out of his hands. Now, I don't know that with 100% certainty, which is why I hesitate when I say it a little bit, but it's a level of frustration and a lack of trust for Jimmy Haslam. First of all, the bigger picture of why Kevin Stefanski still has, as far as we know, not been offered a contract extension. Same for Andrew Berry. Jerry Jeudy, on the other hand, got his contract extension. I'll get to that in a second. But Kevin Stefanski this morning saying still no decision made on who is the play caller. I don't believe that. I think the Browns have made the decision. I just think for whatever reason they don't want to announce it. Maybe they won't even – who knows if they'll announce it even before training camp. They might just keep it a mystery until the first game of the year. With, you know, at least try to. Seems like – if it wasn't a big deal, they just tell us. So the fact that they are dragging this on now for 2 months, a little less than that, 6 weeks, It feels like they have something to hide. If they had just said right away, even if it was Ken Dorsey, that he was going to be the play caller, it would have been, you know, I mean, there have been people like me saying, oh, Kevin's had his hand forced, and I don't think it's a good idea, and then you move on. But they're keeping this story in the news by now, it's going to keep getting brought up. Every time anybody from the media, as they had this morning, has a chance to speak to Kevin Stefanski or Ken Dorsey, the question's going to get asked until there's an answer. It's just that, this is the way it works. And there'll always be a group of fans, oh, you're making a story about nothing. Well, if it's nothing, then why don't they tell us? If it's not a big deal, you can't call and scream at us all the time and say, I want this for play calling. That play calling stinks. And then a couple of months later, when we're saying, why don't we know who the play caller is, get mad at us for questioning why they haven't announced it. It seems silly. But a couple other small things that Kevin Stefanski said. I wrote them down. So let me look at what I wrote here. Let's see. Watson is in a, what do you say? In a good place. That was his quote. Watson is in a good place. I know he threw for the first time this past week. He said, Nick Chubb is in the building, rehabbing every day. Every day, not a surprise. With all the talk of a Nick Chubb contract in the offseason, it looks like, you know, that I would assume they're going to restructure at some point. But it's obviously very clear at this point that that any small fear we had about Nick Chubb being cut is not happening. If the Browns were in that unlikely event going to move on from Nick Chubb, it would have happened already. One other thing, Kevin Stefanski was asked about the rumors of the Browns being the team that's going to play against the Eagles in Brazil on the second day of the season. You got the Thursday night opener, and then there's the Friday night game in Brazil on that first week. And he says, no word. They don't know. So that's what we got from Kevin Stefanski. Not much. Now, over the weekend, Albert Breer tweeted out the details on the Jerry Jeudy contract. There was some confusion as to whether the guaranteed money and the overall money being talked about included the 2024 season that was already guaranteed because it was the fifth-year option that the Broncos had picked up last year. And when we see the full numbers, it's kind of halfway between two because so it ends up being a three-year, $52.5 million extension. $19 million guaranteed this year. Now, he was guaranteed about 12. The Browns gave him a signing bonus for this extension. So he's getting his 12 guaranteed plus an extra $6 million this year. He has a $16 million base salary for next year, and that is fully guaranteed. Then a $13.5 million base salary for 2026, of which $6 million is guaranteed. And then $17 million in 2027, none of that is guaranteed. Albert Breer adds this. What's different about this? Jeudy's deal was first restructured on March 14th, turning $11.862 million into a signing bonus, adding voided years, and knocking the base to the minimum. He got another $6.103 million signing bonus on the new deal, done March 19th, as a 2024 raise. So it's two contracts. So the guaranteed number is basically halfway between what we thought it might be without next year or this year and what we thought it if it was just including 2025 and forward. Overall, at this point, listen, the deal's not. It depends how he plays. The Browns are locked into Jerry Jeudy for the next 2 years. This year and next year, they were going to be locked in anyway this year. So they've added one more year that they didn't have to lock into. They've locked into about 45% of his salary for 2026. So he's probably going to be here for at least 3 years. And in the end, the money's not that bad that even if he's what he was in Denver, it's not terrible. If he's what he was in Denver, he's a little overpaid. If he's what we thought he'd be in Denver, he's fairly paid to maybe even slightly underpaid. If he's worse than he was in Denver, it's a disaster. But the odds are he probably won't be. So after seeing the final details on the Jerry Jeudy contract and having a little time here to hash through it, I'm okay with it. I still would have preferred him to play as an upcoming free agent, but when I see the final numbers in there, it's not that bad. It's not as bad as I thought, as it seemed in the beginning. So I'm okay with it in the end here. One more note, because I just saw something pop up. Let's see. I just saw something pop up on Stefanski, so let me see if there's anything new here. I'll have to look at it later. It doesn't look like anything else. He spoke at the breakfast, addressed. He talked about one other thing. That's it. I knew there was one other thing. Kevin Stefanski did talk about Mike Vrabel and adding the Jameis Winston. I have more details on that during the week. But they also brought back Cade York, which is funny. There was so much talk, and obviously Dustin Hopkins did a great job as the kicker, and you'd expect Dustin Hopkins to be the kicker this season as well, but they decided to bring back Cade York. Meanwhile, one of the Browns' competitors, the Bengals, Zach Taylor, was asked about Joe Burrow's recovery from wrist surgery just minutes ago. He said, quote, "It's positive, it's right on schedule, and so we're encouraged with everything we thought it was going to be and where he's going to fit in our offseason." So nothing there. As for the Steelers, Mike Tomlin reiterated that Russell Wilson, quote, has pole position to be the starting quarterback, not against competition, and, quote, when it's time to compete, Justin will be given an opportunity to show his capabilities. He said Justin Fields oozes talent. He was also asked about Cam Sutton, who's been in some trouble off the field, was asked if he reaches out to guys like that. He said, "I do, but those conversations are between us." Has he talked to Sutton? Quote, "None of your business." Yeah, that's fair. So there you go. I haven't seen anything from John Harbaugh. Jim Harbaugh has spoken today, but nothing that I've seen from John Harbaugh. He also said, Mike Tomlin also said, when it comes to Justin Fields, a lot of meat still left on the bone. I agree. I think with the right coaching, I still think there's a lot of potential with Justin Fields. And the Steelers, unfortunately, are way better at quarterback. And anybody saying they're not way better than last year at quarterback is conning themselves. I wish it wasn't true. But unfortunately, it is. All right, let's talk about the Cavs. Unfortunately, we got to talk about them too. They suck right now. They're playing terrible basketball. They got absolutely humiliated by the Miami Heat yesterday, 121-84. The Cavs have now dropped three in a row and six of their last eight. They're playing terrible basketball. They're closer to the eighth seed now than they are to the two. Remember, they were the two seed as recently as a week ago. But they're now they're not closer to the eighth seed, but they're almost as close. And they are closer to being the five than they are to the two. The Bucks, so the Cavs are start the day three games back of the Bucks for the two seed, and the Bucks have won two in a row. Man, the Bucks are 11 games back of Boston. They win 60 games this year, over 60 games. Cavs are a half game up on the Knicks, tied in the loss column for the three seed. They're a game ahead of Orlando for the five, and then, you know, three and a half to Indiana. I don't know how far they're going to fall. The teams below that, Miami and Philly, had not been playing great either, except Miami just beat the Cavs. But Miami had lost 7 of 10 before, 6 of 9 before that. So they had not been playing great basketball. But the Cavs feel like they're trending towards the five seed right now, because Orlando, despite losing their last game, had won 7 of 9 before that. The Knicks are playing very well again right now, and so are the Bucks. So the Cavs are in some trouble. They've got a ton of injuries. Darius Garland's not playing well at all. Donovan Mitchell's situation is not great, to say the least. The Cavs did get Evan Mobley back. But, you know, the starting lineup barely played because, I mean, the Cavs only had one player score double digits in this game. 120-184. They had 57 points at the end of three quarters. And then in garbage time, they brought Monty Bates got to play. G's favorite guy had 9 points off the bench. But, Evan Mobley was the only player in double digits. 15 points. Shot it well. Hit 2 threes. I guess it's the only thing you could be happy about out of that game, but there's really nothing. I mean, they were a mess, and they are a mess, and it's hard to have any hope in the Cavaliers right now. They've played 71 games. You got 11 games left in the season. The playoffs are going to start in a few weeks, and with at best a slightly dinged Donovan Mitchell, I don't know how you can be confident against anybody, especially if they end up playing the Knicks, who smoked them last year. They've had their number. Now, obviously, you'd rather play Orlando. And if the Cavs end up being the 4 seed or the 5 seed and playing the Magic or even Indiana, then you'd think they'd still have a decent shot of winning a round at least. But that's it. I mean, if they play the Knicks in the first round, they're probably going to get beat. There's no way they're winning this. Not the way they're playing right now. And it doesn't mean it can't change. If Donovan Mitchell can get back and they can start playing like they were, maybe it's possible. But they got, if they're the 4 or 5 seed, even if they somehow win that series, then you go play Boston. They don't have a prayer. I mean, there's no chance they're going to beat Boston. None. I don't think they can beat the Knicks, the Bucks, or the Celtics. Anybody else, I give them a chance in the first round. But those three teams, I don't see it. Not at all. One other thing I'm going to hit on for a couple minutes, that's the Guardians. Today is also the debut of the Ultimate Cleveland Guardian show as part of the Ultimate Cleveland Sports Show family. So Zach Meisel and I will be doing that show Mondays at 3 o'clock. So check it out. The Guardians did reach, or did tentatively reach their 26-man roster for the start of the season on Thursday. The Guardians will open the year in Oakland. And the biggest storyline over the weekend is Miles Straw. He is off the major league roster. My dream has come true. Now, what would be the greatest thing ever is if somebody claimed him. Miles Straw was waived. If somebody claimed him on waivers, I'd be beyond stunned. I'd say there's less than a 1% chance that anybody will claim him on waivers. It would be fantastic for the Guardians if somebody did. I guess there's always the possibility of big market teams like this guy's a great fourth outfielder. Let's pick him up. But he's got guaranteed money for the next 3 years, including this year, and he's getting paid like $6, $7 million. And he should be a minimum salary player or making $1 million, $2 million a year at most. Yeah, $4 million at the most. So I can't imagine that's going to happen, even for a big market team. I'd say crazier things have happened, but he's the worst hitter in baseball, he and Austin Hedges. But the good news is, at least now, like, I don't think they would have ever done this with Tito. And a fresh guy, and Stephen Vogt, the young manager, and the team, they're going to have to just swallow that contract. And Miles Straw is going to be making about $20 million over the next 3 years or whatever, somewhere between $17 and $20 million over the next 3 years to play in Columbus. He could opt out and become a free agent, but then he'd have to give up his contract, and there's no way he's going to do that. So Miles Straw is just going to be one of the highest-paid minor leaguers, and he'll play for Columbus. There's a chance he'll come back at some point, but he's off the 40-man roster, and he will either be, you know, 99.9% playing for Columbus on opening day, which is good. Now, what are they going to do in center field? They got to figure it out. Estevan Florial made the team. He has no options left. He was a top Yankee prospect a number of years ago. He's killed it every time in AAA. He did nothing with his opportunities in New York. The Guardians acquired him for Cody Morris this offseason. We'll see if he can do anything. He had a terrible spring training. I think Tyler Freeman's in the mix to play some center field. I think Will Brennan's in the mix to play some center field. I was excited that Freeman made the team. I was excited that Brian Rocchio made the team. And I like when I heard from Zach that Rocchio's going to play, be the primary shortstop, and Gabriel Arias is going to be a utility guy. I want to see Rocchio get a shot to play every day. So I'm excited about that. Carlos Carrasco, the fifth starter. I would have liked him in the bullpen better, but all right. He was terrible last year with the Mets, but as a fifth starter, it's fine. You know, most teams don't have a good fifth starter anyway. It's cool that he's back on the roster, though. All right, that's going to do it for me. Thanks to everybody who joined me, as always. Watch, listen, please hit the subscribe button. Please hit the thumbs up. You'll get alerts every time I do a podcast. Thanks to Brian Monzo for producing. We'll talk to you next time. Where else but right here in the bullpen with Adam the Bull, brought to you by Bet Rivers. See you, everybody.
Thanks for listening to The Bullpen with Adam the Bull on the Bet Rivers Network.